Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The San Francisco Bay Area is home to an estimated 7.2 million people and is projected to climb to 9.3 million by 2040. 9.3 million people by 2040. If you regularly ride across the Bay Bridge or the Golden Gate Bridge, or if you commute, you have seen a major increase in traffic over the past year. The Bay Area is home to five out of seven of the fast-growing countries in the state, according to the census. San Francisco County alone is home to an estimated 852,000 people, and it's growing. Across the Bay Area, we're seeing population spikes, and public utilities and transit systems are struggling to keep up. This weekend, BART is shutting down the Transbay Tube for track work. Caltrans deputies are warning weekend commuters to cancel non-essential travel. Bus riders and drivers trying to cross the Bay Bridge this weekend can expect 40 to 50 minute delays. And then there's Uber. According to the Washington Post, Uber has 15,000 drivers on the roads of San Francisco, and we're trying to get data about how many drivers are on the road at any given time. On today's Your Call, we are talking about the best ways to improve transit as our cities become more crowded. How are city officials responding? What solutions would you propose? And what changes have you seen on the roads in the past couple of years? Today, we're joined by Daniel Chapman, Associate Professor of City and Regional Planning at UC Berkeley. Daniel studies travel behavior, smart growth, and connections between public transportation, immigration, and the economic growth of cities. Hi, Daniel. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you. We're also joined by Joel Ramos, Regional Planning Director with Transform. It's a statewide transportation organization whose mission is to build a movement to transform our communities and transportation. And Joel joins me in studio. Hi, thank you for coming in.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So, Joel, let's start off with you. Things are really changing so quickly. I mean, I'm seeing changes going to Petaluma. Even a year and a half ago, you had to leave by 2:30 and you were okay. And now you really have to leave by 1 or you're going to be stuck in a lot of traffic.
Yeah, no, things have been changing since the 70s, unfortunately. What we're realizing all of a sudden, of course, is that we're bumping up against the limitations of our infrastructure to be able to accommodate the growth that we've been seeing for so long. It's gotten to the point now where, people are driving from extraordinarily far distances to get to jobs that they can't afford to live closer to. And as a result, our systems and our roads are inundated in a way that that hampers commute times for everyone.
And so you're seeing an increase in traffic. What does the data tell us?
Anybody can take a look around and see that the commutes are getting worse and worse. And, especially if you're a transit rider, I was on a train just yesterday going eastbound in the in the commute direction, and we got to a point at the Montgomery and Embarcadero stations at right around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, heading back into the East Bay, where there were passengers that were being left behind, and you can't even get home. And if you're trying to pick up a kid from childcare, or you're trying to get to your next job, or whatever it might be, these are strains that are making matters and the experience of living in the Bay Area all the more stressful for everyone.
And I've heard from people who take Muni that if the train doesn't come where they're, like at Civic Center or Pell, they will jump on the train the other way to go to the Embarcadero to make sure that they get a seat.
Yeah.
I've done that.
Upstreaming.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's a phenomena that a lot of us that have been taking transit for a long time have unfortunately had to resort to. And it's because, like I said earlier, we've grown so much and we haven't really grown our transportation systems or better utilized our street infrastructure to better accommodate this growth. And now I think we're bumping up against the limitations. And anybody that is trying to drive into, for example, to a BART station is seeing that parking lots are full, that they're having to drive around from BART station to BART station to look for parking. People that are, like I said, that are on transit are seeing the cost of transit go up and up and up because it's getting more and more expensive to deliver service in places where it's taking longer to deliver service. In the past, where it may have taken 30 minutes for a transit line to function efficiently. Now it's taking 40 minutes, and that takes more time and labor and fuel and wear and tear on the vehicles. Everything is getting more expensive, and everything is taking longer.
And Daniel, what strikes you about what you're seeing today?
I take a slightly different view of these trends. I think it notwithstanding everything that Hoyle has said, it's certainly true that we have more and more demand and strain on the existing system. And I do think that it's fair to say that what we need to do, among other things, is to increase investments in infrastructure and investments in ITS, intelligent transportation systems, that better manage peak loads on transit and on the roads. So those things definitely need to happen. But another way of viewing what's happening in the Bay Area is that the Bay Area and the core counties of the Bay Area particularly are a hugely successful economy on the global scale. And this has resulted in huge amounts of demand for people to live and work here. And also the increasing affluence of a lot of the people who live in the Bay Area has increased the amount of travel that they do. So this is a common phenomenon that when people have higher incomes over time, that they're going to spend more time going out and doing things like that, and doing so at times often that also interfere with peak travel of workers. And all of that happening is in a way a symptom of success of the economy, as at the same time that it speaks to our difficult challenge that we face in accommodating not only longer-term growth in the population and the worker base, but also fluctuations in travel demand that arise due to fluctuations in the economy. And we've had a bit of that in the Bay Area, and what we're seeing right now is a real upturn after a bit of a downturn a couple, 3 years ago. So, as to what we do about that, I think that we can have that discussion, but it isn't all going to be infrastructure investments, because those are extraordinarily expensive. And while they are certainly warranted from a benefit-cost analysis perspective, in the case, for example, of many of the kind of BART expansion or improvement proposals that have been put forth by Transform and by other organizations, nevertheless, it isn't always the case that the way to solve these problems is to either invest in transit or in roads. So I do want to point out that there are other modes available, in particular walking and cycling, and Transform is an organization that, of course, is quite promoting of these modes as well. And you'll notice that crowding on sidewalks isn't being identified as an issue so far, and that's because, for the most part, people are expecting long-distance motorized transportation to be subsidized in various ways, and the consequences of that are, at times, it's going to create very high-cost transportation situations in our path when we experience fluctuations in the economy and increases in growth that we can't respond to right away. So I think we have some challenges there.
Definitely. And I know a lot of people, myself included, who sometimes drive because it'll take twice the time to take the bus or longer. And if you're running late, you can't chance it. I mean, to get to the studio, it would take about an hour and 15 on the bus, but driving takes about 30 minutes. And a lot of people would rather take the bus. And, you know, something you might not want to admit, but I'm sure a lot of people are in that predicament. And
absolutely.
Hoel, you are too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I want to agree with Dan in everything that he said. I don't mean to sound like I was suggesting that we need to build our way out of it. I, from the perspective that I'm taking, I include smart information technology-based systems as part of infrastructure and, traffic signal priorities, better bicycling and pedestrian infrastructure are all pieces of the puzzle that we need to implement in a way that we can get more out of the limited infrastructure that we have.
Well, and the other thing is, how should a city deal with this at a time when we are seeing an explosion of new condos in San Francisco, an explosion of buildings?
Yeah.
So many people are now flocking to San Francisco. The population of San Francisco County is 852,469. And according to the census, since 2010, San Francisco has increased by 47,000 people.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So how are city officials responding to this?
Well, I think that it's a tough nut to crack because what we are going to have to do is we're going to have to change the status quo of the way that we've been doing things, the way that, you know, generations of families are used to getting around. We're going to have to revisit the width of our sidewalks, like Dan mentioned. I mean, the fact of the matter is that there are more people downtown and there are more people that are walking, getting back and forth to jobs and home and doing extracurricular activities and what have you. And as a result, there's higher incidence of pedestrian collisions with cars there, and what have you. And so what we're going to have to do, of course, is revisit the way that things are moving, people and things are moving around in our city, or cities, I should say, because as Dan was mentioning, this is something that is happening in just about every major city in the country. People are recognizing that, driving out to a suburban home for a two-hour commute each day is not all that it was cracked up to be. And so folks are looking to live closer to where they work and live a more walkable, bikeable lifestyle, which I think we would all appreciate being able to do. And so what that creates, of course, is this pressure to revisit the way we have been doing things for generations since the 50s. And that means, putting bike lanes on every major corridor. It means putting bus bulbs and maybe in some cases transit-only lanes to expedite our bus service so we can get more people through traffic clogged corridors more quickly and get more people on the bus. It means revisiting the way that we've been facilitating our parking and managing our parking. There are so many different things that have to change. It's a change from the way that we've been doing things since, ever since the automobile really kind of became a major tool for us to be able to get around.
Daniel.
This is Dan again. I wanted to pick up on a point that you made, which was that you said that it was faster to take to drive than to take the bus. And that's going to be the case in a lot of instances, but part of what I think needs to happen to sort of add to what Joel is talking about here is that there are conditions on the network and there are conditions on roads and on transit that are essentially about the allocation of space to different modes. And it's implicit when we talk about widening sidewalks, well, we're talking about having to take some space away from somebody else, and who's that going to be from? Mm-hmm. What makes the most sense to do? Walking is an incredibly inefficient way of getting around. People take up very little space, and they can stop on a dime, and they can move around people really easily. It's what's amazing is that we don't have a better transportation technology in terms of the sheer efficiency of space use and of adaptability and maneuverability yet compared to the average walker. So what do we do about that? Well, we have to think about reallocations of space away from inefficient users of space to more efficient users of space, and that means doing things like what's been done in London, which is to take parking away from streets and to dedicate that to bus lanes and to make bus travel that much faster and to, yes, inconvenience drivers. And the problem with this, obviously, is that drivers don't want to be inconvenienced, and most people are drivers at one point or another. But at the same time, to enhance and improve the kind of the productivity and the competitiveness of dense cities, one has to try to get to a point where, you can travel by transit and by walking and by biking and get to the places that you need to go fast and conveniently, and driving, which is extraordinarily inefficient use of space in places that are highly competitive in terms of the rents and everything else, should have prices associated with it that are high. And those prices should be on the parking space, and they should be, in fact, on the roads. And it isn't really a fair use of space to give people free access to road space and to parking space, which isn't the case in San Francisco anyway, that you would pay nothing for parking. But these pricing solutions have to be part of the conversation as well.
Daniel Chapman is Associate Professor of City and Regional Planning at UC Berkeley. He studies travel behavior, smart growth, and connections between public transportation, immigration, and the economic growth of cities. Joel Ramos is Regional Planning Director with Transform, a statewide transportation organization whose mission is to build a movement to transform our communities and transportation. And on today's Your Call, we are talking about transportation. How can we improve transit as our cities become more crowded? What can we do to cope with the growing pressure on public transportation and our roads? What changes have you seen over the past couple of years? What solutions would you propose? How are our city officials responding to this? Give us a call at 866-798-8255. If you work on these issues, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Dan, you recently completed a study that looks at which U.S. transit systems succeed and why. Can you give us some positive examples? What did you find?
Well, in that study, which was a sort of very data-intensive study looking at most of the rail systems in the United States, the ones that we could get good data for, we were trying to predict what made ridership increase. And in other words, trying to see what characteristics of cities and of the areas served by the corridors gave rise to higher levels of ridership on transit. And in that study, what we found was that one needs a combination of basically three things. The first two things are kind of obvious. They are lots of people living near the rail stations. And the second thing is also obvious. It's lots of people working near the rail stations. But what we also found was that the interaction of these two was even more highly predictive than either of them on their own, and that in places, in other words, where you had a good balance of people living and working near stations, that you would have much higher ridership, and that the city's characteristics itself and themselves made a difference. So if you had high parking costs and if you had high congestion, and this is a nice segue into a point I wanted to make, then you would have higher ridership. Now, what we're seeing in the Bay Area are precisely the conditions to best support alternative modes, because when roads become really crowded, that's when you have to try to use other options that are more efficient. If roads are freely drivable and there's no problem getting from place to place in the car, then making investments in transit probably doesn't make much sense at all. And in fact, we have that problem elsewhere in the United States. Now, San Francisco is not an example of this, but elsewhere in the U.S., we're making very expensive rail investments that in many cases really don't make any financial sense. And for that matter, any environmental sense. If you want to make an environmental impact, you'd be better off spending the $1 billion scrapping old cars or something like that.
And where is that happening?
Where is what happening?
Where are you seeing transit being built, a lot of money being built, poured into transit where it's just not working?
Oh, it's happened in Texas. It's happened in North Carolina. It's happened arguably in Minnesota. It's happened in New Jersey, which is a place where I've studied rail, where you have, instead of doing something that's more efficient with funds, you put it into rail because rail is something that the public supports, that they like it better than buses or even, you know, intelligent transportation system technology that can make better use of the roads, and so rail can be built. And I think this is slowly improving over time because of the way that federal funding is now allocated. But in the very recent past, we've had a number of instances where there are rail systems and rail lines being built that are quite expensive and have very few riders. And so that was the purpose of the study, was to look at that question and to try to articulate what you really want in place. Yeah. But just as a quick point, you know, we have all this congestion on our roads in the Bay Area. That's a real opportunity in a way. And it's a reason why cities, big cities, are so much more environmentally sustainable than the alternative. And so we see it as a big problem here, but from a bigger perspective, it's an opportunity and it's actually an indication of how relatively environmentally sustainable on a per capita basis things are in the Bay Area in comparison to other places.
Yeah, and I would just add, Dan, that there's you know, I really want to touch on this this love affair that the United States has with rail projects, and you know, this unfortunately, this really extraordinarily steep learning curve that we've all got to go through to get a better understanding of how we can be doing more with the infrastructure that we have without the high the high cost rail extensions or expansions that that we are just we've grown up seeing and looking at in movies and when we travel to big cities. And rail doesn't always make sense for every transportation expansion, and it's in that regard that Transform particularly has been really excited and supportive of concepts of like bus rapid transit or what we call BRT. There's a number of cities, you know, starting off in South America where they didn't have the money to build expensive rail extensions. They went ahead and they put in bus rapid transit or BRT expansions. And what this is frankly just repurposing, like Dan was saying earlier, taking away lanes from mixed auto use and making them exclusively available for bus systems. So it's not like a regular bus, because the bus gets its own right-of-way like BART. Mm-hmm. It would also stop at stations, you know, like the Caltrain stations or something to that effect, where you actually have platforms that are level boarding, and it works effectively just like a train system, but it can be built at a fraction of a cost and at a rate that really responds to the sense of urgency that we really need to be addressing these issues with right away.
And so are you talking about a bus lane only? Because yeah. I understand they have that in Germany.
Well, we actually have it right here in San Francisco and a couple of places now.
But not that many, right?
Not that many, but we're trying to move them along. We've been working on them for decades. It's just because, like Dan was speaking to earlier, a lot of drivers don't want to be inconvenienced with the fact that we have to repurpose these lanes. We have to effectively recycle these lanes. We recycle our buildings. We recycle our building materials. It's time that we recycle our driving lanes and repurpose them in a way where we can actually move more people more quickly. And we do that by effectively creating what otherwise would be a light rail system, where you have buses that are cruising through, passing up traffic, and then boarding at platforms where, like BART, they just roll on. There's no steps involved. The stations that are, walkable distances, not like BART stations, but are walkable, a third of a mile on average, or, maybe some cases in places where it's densely populated, you get them more frequently distanced, but, certainly within walkable distance for the majority of folks. And in this way, of course, you can save a tremendous amount of money. And this works in lots of different capacities. If we're going to expand the BART system out anymore, like to Livermore, we would really recommend, and BART is studying an option where they would, instead of the high cost of building the rail out to Livermore, we would just create a bus rapid transit system, a BRT system, that would do the same thing at a fraction of the cost and way more quickly.
And so just quickly before we go to break, are city officials talking about actually doing these things?
Yes. We are actually got one underway on Van Ness Boulevard. We've got one underway on Geary that's in the studying phases. They're already starting construction on relocation of utilities on International Boulevard in the East Bay. So it's happening, but just not fast enough.
Today on Your Call, we are talking about how we can improve transit as our cities become more crowded. The Greater Bay Area is home to 7 million people. By 2040, that's projected to climb to 9 million people. So what's your experience been like? This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call with Rose Aguilar on Local Public Radio. To join in today's conversation, the toll-free number is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Please let us know if you're a first-time caller. We love to hear from new voices. If you'd prefer to write rather than call, the email address is feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, World Have Your Say from the BBC. Following that at noon today from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, it's Bina. And then this afternoon at 1, Open Air.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We will be discussing coverage of the 50th anniversaries of Medicaid and Medicare. We will also talk about coverage of the new U.S.-Turkey alliance to fight the so-called Islamic State. But today, we are talking about how to improve transit as our cities become more crowded. What can we do to cope with the growing pressure on public transportation and our roads? How are city officials responding? And what solutions would you propose? Excuse me. Today, we are joined by Daniel Chapman, Associate Professor of City and Regional Planning at UC Berkeley. Joel Ramos is Regional Planning Director with Transform, a statewide transportation organization. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's go next to Bruce in Oakland. Hi, Bruce. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I think Daniel's idea of eliminating parking in dense urban areas is very wrong-headed because it's incomplete. Unless there's an equal construction of parking lots and parking buildings to give people an affordable place to park when they come in. People come into city centers for shopping, for meetings, and a multimodal transportation where you go from a bus to BART to another bus doesn't work when you're carrying a lot of stuff. It doesn't work when you have to wait 15 to 30 minutes from the bus to the BART or from the BART to the next bus. And the idea of, well, let's just get rid of parking spaces and that'll solve the problem is a terrible idea unless they build parking structures. Otherwise, people will stop coming into this city. People will stop shopping there. People will, you know, it won't work as a city center if people can't get to it.
Well, thank you for that. Dan, what are your thoughts? We found a report by Siemens, and it showed that drivers looking for a parking space account for about 40% of San Francisco traffic.
Oh, that's funny that you found that report. I mean, the estimate of 40% of traffic attributable to people looking for a space is sort of, even though that appears in that report, it's sort of a ballpark estimate. Yes, a lot of traffic is accounted for by people looking for parking, especially on-street parking. And we don't know quite how much, but we know it's pretty significant in crowded downtown areas that do have street parking. I mean, I think this reminds me of a quote from Yogi Berra, who I think he may have passed away recently, a baseball player who was known for malapropisms. And he said, he was speaking of a popular nightclub or meeting place. He said, that place is so crowded, nobody goes there anymore. And if you think about it, San Francisco is crowded. It's congested. We have a big problem there. We have lots of people trying to come in there. And I don't, to be somewhat provocative, and then I'll be less provocative in a minute, I don't think it's true that people will not come to downtown if there isn't as much parking. I think the whole problem is created precisely by the fact that there is so much demand, and the question is, well, what do you do at that point? How do you manage that? Now regarding, you know, I don't believe, I think it's not true that that we won't have people going to downtown if there's a reduction in the amount of parking available. I do think there are several issues here. One of them is on-street parking is underpriced. It's still underpriced even now, even though there have been increases in parking prices per hour in San Francisco at meters. They haven't occurred everywhere, for one thing, and then secondly, they haven't been high enough, actually. How do people respond when the price of parking goes up or the supply of parking goes down and therefore price usually goes up? Well, they do various things. They have to use other modes. They may decide not to go there. They may carpool. They may go at off-peak times when they don't experience prices that are quite as high. Maybe they'll go on the weekend when the prices aren't nearly as high as they are during the week. All of these responses are appropriate responses to price increases and supply decreases that make our system more efficient. That's what we want to see. So that's what I'm getting at when I talk about, in general, the notion of pricing parking and of supply of parking. Now, coming specifically to the idea of taking space away from parking and giving it over to buses, well, look, people who want to drive are going to be inconvenienced by that. Absolutely. That is going to happen. And the people who take the bus are going to be convenienced by it. They're going to actually have faster and more reliable bus rides. So it is a trade-off, and all I can say about that trade-off is, in my view, it makes perfect sense from a fairness perspective, and it makes perfect sense from a benefit-cost perspective, and it makes perfect sense from an economic perspective. But it is a political decision, and as to whether it is likely to happen at large scale, I very much doubt it will, precisely because it's hard for people to give up something that they see as a right and see as something that they depend on. And managing that transition is really tough. And I don't pretend to have any answers about that. But I do think that the efforts that the city of San Francisco and the associated transportation agencies there have been doing is aware of these issues and is trying to manage them the best they can.
In San Francisco, meter rates range between $2 and $3.50 per hour. I think on Valencia during peak time, it's about $5 an hour. And the city is piloting demand responsive pricing. This is according to the Chronicle. In SF Park pilot areas, where rates incrementally adjust every 6 to 8 weeks, depending on demand, this may range from 25 cents to $6 an hour. And if you do use the meter, just to let you know, the city is going to charge an additional 27 cents if you use a credit card.
Yeah, you know, what I would say to that is, and to getting back to the caller's philosophy of we just need to build more parking, you just can't take it away, I would point out that nobody wants to live next to a parking garage. Parking garages are an antiquated way of accommodating traffic or customers or what have you in an urban core. And plus, when you build parking garages, you get more traffic. So by trying to solve the problem, you're actually making it worse. It's kind of like, you know, the old thinking of, well, if we just build more lanes of freeways, we'll get less traffic. And what ends up happening, of course, is just more people take up the new lanes of the freeways. I'd give you the Caldecott, you know, the new bore that they developed on the 24 there, the new tunnel. I would also say that, unfortunately, the caller expresses the kind of political challenges that that those of us that are working in transportation have, which is the fact that we are going to have to start repurposing and revisiting the way we've done things in the past. Basing parking, the cost of parking on the demand is a way where we can actually, in some cases, make parking more affordable, because in a lot of places, you know, nobody wants to spend the same amount of to park someplace that's really far away that you would pay for a spot that would be really convenient. And so instead of parking, you know, where it's, you know, 3 blocks away from your destination where it's the same price, but you have to walk 3 blocks, you're going to circle and circle and circle and circle until you find the spot that opens up at the same cost. So in some cases, we lower the cost of parking. And but in places where, you know, people really need that convenience and need a place to park, it does make sense, and it has shown. And I would encourage people to look up Professor Don Shoup's book, The High Cost of Free Parking. He's a professor out of UCLA, did wonderful work, and I think has inspired a lot of this thinking around the cost of parking.
Well, thank you for the call, Bruce. And we've got full lines, so I hope we can get to all of you. Let's go to Eloise in San Francisco. Hi, Eloise. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. So I work in the entertainment industry. I'm a stagehand, and one of the things that many of us are starting to come up against is that there is no place to park near our work. We have lots of tools that we take to work. We don't go to the same place every day. In fact, we usually go to a different place every day, and we can't take most forms of public transportation, especially to the East Bay, because it doesn't run late at night.
Right.
So we're kind of stuck there. And especially for the younger members coming into the local, they're priced out of San Francisco to live here. So it's between a rock and a hard place.
That's true. Yeah. No, I get that. And a big part of the problem that you're getting or that you're seeing, of course, is people. There are a lot of us that don't have a choice with respect to the need to drive. My brother is a carpenter. You know, he makes a living being able to drive his tools around. You know, we have got delivery vehicles all the time that, like, you know, Meals on Wheels is an extraordinary service that we need to be able to have to deliver folks food in a way that they might not be able to get on their own. The problem, of course, is that the parking that is available is being taken up in such a way where it's being effectively abused in some cases, where to the point where people who really need it can't get it. And by better managing our parking in one way or another, whether it's creating more yellow commercial loading zones or creating systems that would allow for people like the caller to be able to have access to parking when they need it, is all going to happen in a balanced approach of better regulating and managing the parking, so that people who really probably could, with just a little bit more of a nudge and with more infrastructure to support an alternative means of transportation, would be able to make that space that they would otherwise take available to commercial uses.
And on New Year's, there is some transportation to the East Bay from San Francisco. I think there was maybe a pilot program that was doing after-hours transportation.
Yeah. Yeah.
But are officials talking about any form of transportation to the East Bay from after midnight?
No, I think BART has created a service, a pilot bus service, where they're expanding that. It's like all the time now. So if you look at BART's web pages and you look up trans-based services, they have now bolstered their service so that you can get from across the bay more easily. It is a challenge because BART does have, they're limited to that one tube, and when they're doing maintenance and what have you, they do have to shut the whole system down at night to be able to do that maintenance without a second transbay tube. And of course, there is discussion now that's coming out of the BART board where they're starting to explore what is it going to take to create a second tube so that they can effectively always have transbay service. But unfortunately, we're decades away from that. What we need to be doing, of course, is making systems available so that people who could otherwise easily take transit or ride a bicycle or, to Daniel's point, walk, for those of us that are lucky enough to live within walking distance of where we work or where we would like to get around, we need to make the infrastructure, we need to make it possible for people to be able to do that.
Rose, if I can make a larger point here.
Sure.
Which is this: the people's location decisions, the built environment, the urban form of our cities is partially a function of what transportation is available. In other words, people decide to live far away precisely because they can live far away, and they can live far away because the parking is cheap enough and the driving is not so long that they can make that work. And they also decide to live far away because of housing prices. Both of these issues are huge issues in transportation. And when we ignore them, and when we talk about what people can and cannot do given where they live and where they work, that's actually what we need to be thinking about, is how people are making decisions about where to live and work. We need to increase housing supply ubiquitously almost everywhere in the Bay Area. We have huge barriers to that because people do not want housing built next to them.
Yeah.
And this is really the untold story of transportation in the Bay Area, in fact, throughout the United States.
Yeah,
huge control over housing production in places where, if it could be built there, people would have much shorter travel distances and would be much more likely to be able to take alternative modes. And even if they did drive, just the fact that they're on the road for a shorter period of time means that there's less traffic. So this is a bigger picture kind of an issue that I think we need to be thinking about. And the second point I wanted to make is, off-peak transit service is a money loser. It is a hemorrhager.
Mm-hmm.
You lose money hand over fist.
Mm-hmm.
You provide it because you want people who do not have access to cars to have some sort of service. But the fact is that it's not in the middle of the night that we have a problem with transportation in the Bay Area.
Well,
it's
for
not,
some of us.
Not on the roads, I should say, not with cars. And generally, if people are parking in the middle of the night, they can find a parking space.
Yeah. No, and the only thing that I would add to that would be, the great majority of us who live far away from our jobs are doing so because we can't afford to live closer.
Right.
There's a phenomenon that happens all the time that in the housing and transportation industry or field, we call the drive till you qualify phenomenon. My own father, who came here from Detroit in the 70s, offered a job in San Francisco, couldn't afford to find a place to live here, had to end up going as far away as Pittsburgh. And so every day, my pop would drive from Pittsburgh to Concord to get on the BART train and then commute in. I know people today that are driving as far away from Manteca, For those of you who speak Spanish, it's the city of lard. It's Manteca. But it's Manteca. It's super far away. And they work at the San Francisco Examiner. Or I know people who work for the Alameda County Public Health Department, and they're driving as far away as Antioch. You know, and it's not because they want to. It's not because, you know, the glorious city of Manteca or Antioch are attractive. It's just that we can't afford to buy a place closer. And as a result, our transportation systems suffer for it. And of course, this creates problems with our families and in our communities. Mm-hmm. And so while we are building, we need to build more housing, we also need to make sure that it's affordable for everyone at all levels of income. Because, you know, we are having people that are low-income janitors, people working in the service industry that are having to live further and further and further away and are requiring this evening services and what have you.
That is Joel Ramos. He's Regional Planning Director with Transform. It's a statewide transportation organization whose mission is to build a movement to transform our communities and transportation. Daniel Chapman is Associate Professor of City and Regional Planning at UC Berkeley. He studies travel behavior and smart growth. Today, we are talking about how we can improve transit as our cities become more crowded. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We've got a number of calls about the condos being built in San Francisco. Ellen writes, thousands of new condos are being built throughout the city. Is parking provided? It does not appear so. Ellen is a San Francisco native. And then Leslie, excuse me, I'm dealing with a little throat issues here. Leslie writes, I'm really concerned with the dramatic new plans for Van Ness. Don't they know that it's a major highway and the Muni in the middle, or riding a bike on Polk Street is not an alternative for trucks, double-sized tourist buses, or cars trying to get through town? And she wants to know how you both travel and where you both live. And these emails are both related to our next caller, David, in San Francisco. Hi, David.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I live right at the Civic Center BART station, where four buildings are going to be being built. Two are already built, and two more are planned housing with no parking, except now they've built a six-story below parking garage. And it's in a transit-rich area. My concern is not only the traffic that was mentioned that is drawn to parking garages, but how the planning committee in San Francisco allowed for this, and also who is monitoring the pollution that comes from that.
I can speak to all three of those different points. The first one being the concern or the question about all the condos coming with minimal parking. That is always an alarm for a lot of folks that have lived in their communities for a long time and understand how challenging it is to come home at night and look for a space on the street where they need to park and all the parking is gone. It's a challenge that everybody in an urban area has to struggle with. The wonderful news on that is the fact that today a lot of development that happens is done in a way where they are accommodating a car light lifestyle. And Transform actually has a program that helps developers and projects get more less car-oriented, called Green Trip. And what that means is it's reducing the overall travel demand out of a space for cars, a project for cars, by doing things like, not in the past. In the past, things didn't happen this way. But today, if a new project is being built, you know, a condo project, developers are being asked to provide transit passes for like 40 years for transit agencies. Or they're doing things like building bike parking infrastructure within a parking lot of the system, or the project where there previously might not be a parking space, or they're making car share pods available within the projects themselves. And it makes the impact of the project a whole lot less prominent than it would as it traditionally had been in the past. In the past, when you didn't build parking, you just left residents to their own devices and they just bought a car and parked it on the street. That's becoming less and less of a case today. With respect to the Van Ness Boulevard and the BRT project, the city is growing. And it's kind of like, what else are we going to do? You can't just say, no, we're not going to accommodate the new traffic. We have to explore and change things. And, you know, we're not talking about kicking all of the traffic off of Van Ness. We're talking about taking away a couple of lanes from cars and opening them up for transit riders and transit and the riding public so that they don't have to drive. I used to drive up and down Van Ness getting to my job when I worked as a waiter in Ghirardelli Square because the 49 was too slow. To get from my class where I was going to school at San Francisco State, I couldn't make that time because it was too slow. I drove, I created traffic, I took parking spaces up. With the BRT, we're going to be able to expedite travel along that corridor and may actually reduce the overall amount of cars on that corridor. And then I think that I'll stop there and let Dan chime in. I'm sure he has a point.
The one point I would make is that the most important feature reducing traffic for any building is the parking that you provide. And so one of the reasons not to provide parking is to reduce traffic.
Indeed.
Now, I understand that the problem arises when there is on-street parking that is not regulated and can be poached by anybody. And in my view, the way to deal with that problem is to give existing residents property rights over on-street parking and give new residents none. I think that would solve the problem pretty much. And then you would get people occupying these spaces who either are paying for some other accommodation or perhaps are paying for so-called unbundled parking at the site that the developer provides based on what the developer thinks the market will bear. And then you have people coming in who are not planning to drive, and that's how you deal with the problem. But I do think it is a management issue that cannot be resolved simply by requiring more parking. The point about the BRT and what's going to happen there, I agree with Hoel. I think it is a question of using existing space for users who use it, who can travel on the corridor more efficiently using much less space. Most listeners probably haven't seen kind of an iconic image for urban planners that shows how much space is used by 50 people in cars versus 50 people on a bus versus 50 people bicycling versus 50 people walking. Mm. But you can just visualize that and think, wow, that's a big difference. And it has implications when repeated over and over again over the course of this, over the space of a city. It has huge implications for urban form. It has huge implications for how much space there is between different uses. And that's the kind of thing that we're dealing with here implicitly. When we deal with transportation, we're really dealing with space and how it's allocated.
How do you get these messages out, though? Because I'm noticing that, you know, the reality on the road is we're over kind of near the airport, a couple miles south of the airport. I'm sorry, north of the airport. And if you leave at 1:30 to go to the East Bay, you are stuck in so much traffic. This was not the case a year and a half, 2 years ago. And I gave that example about going to Petaluma. You've got to leave by 1 o'clock or you're going to be stuck in traffic. So this is the reality. And I also look at other drivers, one driver usually in most cars. So this is what we're facing right now. I mean, how do you deal with these realities?
We've exploded in terms of growth, and we haven't, our transportation infrastructure hasn't kept up. And one of the ways that Transform at least has been exploring and pushing the region to look into as a solution to that is creating high occupancy toll lanes, or what we're calling hot lanes, or in some cases just express lanes, so that what we do is we, instead of building another lane on the freeway, we create a lane where you can get in with a carpool, or you can pay a fee to be able to utilize the lane. It's repurposing an existing lane. Again, better using what we're using, what we already have. And then taking those revenues that we would get from anybody that wants to pay to move faster to actually fund more transit alternatives for people who, again, who with the appropriate opportunities or options, they could more easily take it. It's just that we don't have real viable options for so many folks.
Well, and our city officials talking about this and the media just aren't covering it, because I just don't hear this as a priority.
We're
talking about what's happening in the greater Bay Area.
People are talking about it, but unfortunately the media is always caught up in other more sensational topics. I'm sure you understand, you know, there's always more pressing issues than, you know, how do we solve our transportation challenges over the next 20 years? And it's a problem that advocacy organizations like Transform always have. We're looking at, Transform specifically is looking at addressing root causes of these challenges, whether it's displacement of folks that, you know, can't can no longer afford to live where we live, or it's addressing the transportation problems that we are grappling with as a region. Unfortunately, it's just not the most exciting thing. You know, the MTA director Ed Riskin was quoted and kind of poked at by saying, you know, when he was quoted saying, you know, infrastructure isn't sexy. It's true. But I think that there is a growing awareness of this, and I think people are sort of at their wits' end.
And just briefly, we have a few emails about Uber and some of these private buses that are now crowding the streets. The Washington Post has a piece about that looks at percentage of Uber drivers in San Francisco. The number, it's 15,000 and growing.
Yeah.
Is this an issue? And our city officials, how are they going to deal with this?
Yeah. Well,
if I can just step in,
Dan.
Well, I'm actually looking at this question in the question of private and private transportation options. Some of them shared ride options and so on. And public transportation options in developing cities throughout the world, so Barranquilla in Colombia and Quito in Ecuador, Cape Town in South Africa, and some other places. And this question of Uber and of private shared transportation services is, I think, a very important part of the future of transportation in U.S. cities and world cities. And it has the potential to actually make our system much more efficient. But we don't know whether it's going to work that way or not. And so the Google buses, the same thing. We have private participation in the provision of shared transportation services. This could be a real game changer and a really much better use of the transportation system, and doesn't put everything on public transportation agencies who have limited resources and who have limited capabilities. So I'm a little skeptical of claims that, for example, New York is making that the 20,000 estimated Uber drivers there, which were just equivalent to the size of the taxi fleet there.
We're almost out of time because this is such an important point.
Yeah, I just
want to
say that the potential is possible, but it really depends on how well regulated this is. And the taxi cab industry is obviously very well regulated. And what's happening right now is our streets are being flooded with Uber drivers or Lyft drivers that are coming from places like Antioch to get a job and collect fares. And we have no control over how many cars are coming into the city. And as a result, all the wonderful wins that we have won by getting people on other transit services are that space that we've created is being taken up. So we definitely need to do it, but it needs to be regulated.
And then will the people who use those services vote for increased funding for public transportation?
And are those services accessible to people of lower incomes or people who don't speak English as a first language and or people with disabilities?
Thank you. To be continued, we will continue this conversation. Joel Ramos is Regional Planning Director with Transform. Daniel Chapman is Associate Professor of City and Regional Planning at UC Berkeley. Thank you for joining us. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of the 50th anniversaries of Medicaid and Medicare. How are the media covering the legacy of these two popular government programs? We'll also discuss the new U.S.-Turkey alliance to fight the so-called Islamic State. Why is Turkey attacking the Kurds? We'll be joined by the Columbia Journalism Review's Trudy Lieberman, Kaiser Health News' Mary Agnes Carey, and McClatchy's Jonathan Landay. Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Nock Nguyen produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.